Tani Vav Amin Aleph. The Gemara is now going to clarify if you can be Machshir Kli Cheres with Libun. El Kederos Shel Migdash Amai Shavru. The Kederos in the Migdash were Bolea, the Tam of the Karbanos, which would become Nosar. And the Torah requires, in the case of Kli Cheres in the Beis HaMikdash, that after Bishul, Yishavru, you have to break them apart. Why is that so? We can still be machshir them with intense heat. And how is that so? Nahadrinu likiv shonos. We'll place it back into the hot furnaces. And the heat of the furnace will remove the blia of these kederos, and they'll be machshir. And that's something that we saw earlier. So if we assume the reason for breaking the earthenware vessels is because they've absorbed the tam that will become nosar, then if those tam is not present in the wall of the kli, in the dofnei kli, then there's no need to break the kli. Now this is a little bit strange, because earlier in the sugya, the Gemara didn't come to any conclusive decision about a tanur in a case where you roasted chatos meat in the tanur and it was suspended in such a way that there was no bliya, but the possibility was, and the Gemara never rejects this possibility outright, that once there's bishul, that requires shvira. Here we seem to assume the underlying premise of this Gemara is that there's no separate requirement of bishul. The Gemara is questioning why the pots in the Beis HaMikdash had to be broken. Could they just be fired up? Meaning that there is libun, and that could be machshir. There's no need to break them. So it's not that there's some gzeiras hakosuv of an automatic requirement based on the bishul itself that it has to be broken. Strange. Well, Rab Zera gives an answer. Why is this not an option? Why doesn't the Torah recognize the action of taking these pots and putting them back into the kivshonos? And the Gemara answers, Rabbi Zeir answers, L'fisha ein osin kivshonos b'Yushalayim. Because the smoke coming out of these furnaces in Yushalayim would blacken the chom of Yushalayim. And as Kedushas Yushalayim, we don't want to do such a thing. So the Gemara right away asks, wait a second, how can you accept this answer, Rav Zera? Amar Abaye v'chiosin ashposos ba'azara. So what's your alternative? Instead of doing this libun, where the smoke could to some extent damage or blacken the walls around Yerushalayim, so you're going to make these ashposos, these rubbish bins, for the earthenware kalim, and break them in the Azara. If you break them in the Azara, you make heaps of trash. And Abai questions basically what you accomplish. Instead of making these heaps of trash, you break, instead of giving the smoke and blackening the walls of Yerushalayim, so you take the Kli Cheres into the Azara, and you make these heaps of broken earthenware vessels. Why not just heat them up? Okay, so we'll have some smoke and we'll survive it. But if you want to be consistent about not violating some sort of bizoyan to Kodesh, then it doesn't seem that the alternative of breaking the kalim circumvents the problem of bizoyan to Kodesh. But rather it must be that this is the din, that if you're doing what the Torah requires, then that's not considered bizayin l'kodesh. And we're not choshish for that. So to the same extent we're not choshish for ashposos b'azara, from the case of shivei kalim, these heaps of trash from the broken kalim, we should apply the same logic to the kivshonos Yerushalayim. We should do the libun for these ovens and so forth, even though they're made of earthenware, but we've already proven in the previous year that burning out, that heating it out in Liban wood kashrut. So why isn't that the din of Kli Cheres? And why do you require Shvira? So the Gemara rejects this and says, Ishtemitete, Abai met, forgot something. What did he forget? Hadetani Shmaya be Kal Nevo, or Karnevo. This is a place that's named after a certain Avodah Zarah. Anyway, what was the statement of Rav Shmaya? Shivrei Kli Cheres Nivlon B'Makomon. That there was a miracle that went on during the time of the Migdash, and the Shivrei Kelim did not pile up some sort of heaps of trash, but rather, what happened was they were swallowed up in their place. There was never Ashpasos Spazor. There were never these mountain, heaps of garbage. And in the case of Kishonos, they couldn't do this because we don't make these furnaces in Yerushalayim, so therefore they didn't subject the Kli Cheres to Libur, but rather they did the Shvira, and there's no chashash here of any sort of Bizoyon to the Azara because of this great miracle of Kli Cheres Nivloim B'Mkoma. The Mishnah in Yuma actually records 10 miracles that occurred on a daily basis in the Migdash, some of them only in the Migdash Rishon. But one of those miracles was that the breaking of these Kli Cheres, the earthenware vessels, did not create mounds of trash in the Azor. By the way, if you had these mounds of trash, then it might invite all sorts of bugs and shrotzim and creatures and so forth, which is a source of tumor, which we don't allow in the Azor. Now the Gemara asks another kasha. If there's a possibility of doing Libun, even with regard to Kli Cheres, so why didn't they make the Tanurim, the ovens, out of Cheres? Elo hodi Omar of Nachman. Omar Rab Baravua Tanur shall Beis HaMikdash shall Mateches Hava. That the ovens that they used in the Beis HaMikdash were made of metal is Navid de Cheres. Why not make them out of Kli Cheres? So again, if you're talking about Kederos, we understand the Kederos in the Migdash, if they were made out of Kli Cheres, you would have to break them up. And the miracle happened that happened. But now you're telling me in the name of Rav Nachman that the ovens in the Beis HaMikdash was Badafka made out of Mateches in order to avoid Kli Cheres, because then it would be a tremendous expense, etc., to break down the ovens in the Beis HaMikdash on a regular basis. And the Gemara says that Seiko Bifnimu, you can certainly subject the Tanur to Libun by heating up the fire inside the oven, and that would generate Libun. And the Gemara answers the following: the Kema de Ika Shte Alechem Alechem Aponim, Dafiyosim B'Tanur, Kdushosim B'Tanur, Havile Klishares, U Klishares de Cheres Law of Dina. Now, while it's true that you could use the tanur made of Kli Cheres for zvachim, and we would be able to be machshir them and get rid of the blias abbasar, the nosar, with hesek mibifdim, but these tanurim served another function, not just for zvachim, but also for afiyah. The afiyah, the baking in the oven of shtei lechem, which was brought on Shavuos, and lechem aponim, which was brought from Shabbos to Shabbos. And the whole process of afiyah is in the oven, is meant to sanctify the tanur, the oven. And therefore we have a problem. If this tanur is used for afiyah, then it becomes, in the cases of shtei lechem and lechem ponim, a kli shoreis. And therefore, if you want to suggest that the ovens themselves should be made of earthenware, we have a problem. And that is that Kli Cheres de Cheres lo avdinan. Now, what does that mean? You're telling me that we don't make a sacred vessel out of earthenware. And the question is, why is that so? The Gemara in Masechta Sukkah, Daf Nun Amud Beis, records machlokes between Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rebbe. Rebbe insists that a klishar should be made of a metal substance. Rabbi Yossi allows you to make it out of wood. The Gemara explains that even according to Rabbi Yossi, that he expands the scope of klishares to include even kleyates. Nevertheless, he's modeh that you cannot make it from a klicheres, because the prototype, the binyan av for a kli sharis is the menorah that was made of zahav, and we need something similar to zahav. Rabbi Yossi is willing to expand it even to wood, but not to a kli sharis. So therefore, although on one level we could use a kli sharis as a tanur, and we would find a way of libud, of kashering it by using hesek b'vifnim, but nevertheless, that tanur, that same tanur in the base of Mikdash would serve under a different capacity, and its function was for afia. And in the case of afia, the tanur actually has the status of a kli sharis to be mekadesh the lechem, and a kli sharis cannot be made of cheres. It's not similar to your paradigm of a kli cheres that's made of gold in the case of the menorah. Now, we have to point out that there was never a kiddush in kli sharis before afia b'tanur. And the reason for that is, unlike menachos, where there was a kiddush of the mincha because it needed shemen, it was bol b'shemen, so they would put the mincha together with the shemen and the kli sharis to be mekadesh it. That didn't happen in the case of a tanur for the afia salechem, whether it be lechem aponim, or whether it be shtei lechem. In those cases, there was no admixture of shemen, and therefore nothing was mixed in a bowl that was a kli sharis, and the kiddush process took place simultaneously with the afia in the tanur. Now we turn to daf Sarivav Amid Beis. The Gemara establishes the following. Vafilu Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you can use a kli sharis even if it's not made of mateches, lo kamar el de'etz. He was willing to expand the available or permissible materials from the limited metals and expand it to include even an eitz. Aval, but he admits, he confesses that kli cheres lo. That's not kosher for a kli sharis. And therefore the tanurim, which were used, as we said before, for baking as well, and in baking they served the role of the kli sharis, they could not be made of this material of cheres. And as I said before, the Gemara in Sukkah goes through many different mi'utim and ribuyim, from the pasuk vasisa menorah zahav tahar, to establish this rule that a kli cheres is excluded from being a kli sharis. Now I'm not sure, but the Evid, what would be the status if he actually used the kli cheres as a kli sharis? Would it be that it's mufka? I don't know. Now the Gemara tells us a story, and again there are parts of the story that are more related to the Rebbe-Talmud relationship, but the halachic part of the story, and that's the import of the story, is Bishul b'miktsas kli. And just by way of introduction, we've discussed in the past a parsha of Mariku Shtifa, which means that a kli that has a blia, let's assume it's not a kli cheres, has a blia of kodshim in it, then it has to be subjected to Mariku Shtifa. We'll have a whole Mishnah, Mirtz Hashem, on the bottom of this Amud about what Mariku and Shtifa is exactly. Cold water, hot water, inside, outside, etc., etc. But be that as it may, what happens in the case of Bishul B'miktsas Kli? We had a similar discussion, if you remember, about the din of dam chatas that fell onto a beged, whether or not you have to clean the entire beged in kibbutz or it's enough to focus on that spot. There's a similar idea here. There's one spot or one part of the kli which was used for bishul, and the kli was shaped in such a way, maybe it had a wide bottom or so, that the meat that he was frying or whatever he was using the kli for, that had a fire underneath it, and the heat did not spread throughout the entire utensil. And now we're going to require Mariku Shtifa, as the Torah requires in order to remove the blia. Shall we limit and focus this Mariku Shtifa to that particular part of the kli where the fire was heating up the food the meat of the carbon and it was bleah? Or do we say no, the entire kli as one indivisible entity needs marikus shtifa? So here's the story about the Rebbe and the Talmud. Rebbe Yitzchak, Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Rogil, Kamei, Deroim, Bar Chava. So this particular fellow by the name of Rebbe Yitzchak, apparently quite an outstanding student, was a disciple of Rabbi Bar Chava. But Shavkei, at some point, he decided he's packing his bags, he's going to a different class, getting himself a different Rebbe. The Azil L'Rav Sheshes. So he leaves Rami Bar Chama and he goes to study with Rav Sheshes. And as we'll soon see, the Rebbe, meaning Rami Bar Chama, was a bit surprised about this whole thing. Yom Achad Pagabe, as days went by, the day came when Rami Bar Chama met with this Rabbi Yitzchak, Amalesi said to him, in a mashal, he gave him a metaphor, Al Kafta Naktan Recha Asile Liyad. So Al-Kafta is a duchos. Duchos, I think in English, is a duke. And if he grabs onto me, Noktan, he grabs onto me with his hand, and he's a sweet-smelling guy because the duke always has to wear perfumes and all that. So the reach of this kingly person would actually impact on the, or permeate to the hand of the person whom he touched. So the duke took me by my hand, and the fragrance of royalty had thereby come upon my hand. And basically, this is a statement or an idiom about haughty people. You know, they hang around with nobility, and they think they'll achieve glory simply by being associated with them. Do you think that just because you're hanging out with Rav Sheshes and you're in his company and you've declared yourself to be a student of his, that's going to make you into a lamed like Rav Sheshes? You're as great as Rav Sheshes is? As if to say, don't be so full of yourself. So now Rav Yitzchak is in a position to justify his decision, and in this case, again, you have to understand the sociological background and the ambiance of this dialogue, because Rabbi Yitzchak is brutally honest with his former Rebbe Rami Bar Chama, and he goes ahead and compares Rami Bar Chama to Rav Sheshes, implying that there's a qualitative improvement by going to learn at the feet of Rav Sheshes. First, he says, "I deny what you said. This is not a matter of gaiva. I'm not full of myself. I'm not trying to show off that as if I'm as great as Rav Sheshes. None of that. Why did I pack out and go to Rav Sheshes? Mishum hachi. This is the reason I went to Rav Sheshes. And at this point, I was hoping that maybe he would say that Rav Sheshes is holiness or something, saintliness, you know, some sort of school of power that he got from Rav Sheshes. No, none of that. But rather, he makes the following incisive comparison. He says, "Ma, when I learn by you, and ki be'ina, be'ina is miloshen baya, meaning a question, when I would ask you a question, milsa, poshet le misvar, you would always give me an answer based on svar. But when I did a little bit more research in the sources," he says, "v'ki mishkachana maslisa parchala, I would do research, I would investigate, I would find a brisa, and I would be parcha is lashon lifra, is the lashon pircha. I could simply undermine what you said because of a contradiction of a brisa, and that would reject your statement. So the answers that I got to my questions from you, Rabbi Bar Chama, were always very, very tenuous, very unreliable. They were nice svaras maybe, but at the end of the day, they didn't hold up in the larger context of scholarship, of finding vices that would contradict that svar. In contrast, Rav Sheshes ki ba'ina milsa mineh, when I ask him a question, poshetli mimaslisa, he immediately quotes a vrisa, which is an authoritative source of Tanoim. Dechina mimishkach so maslisa nupach, and even if I would find another vrisa which would contradict this vrisa, that doesn't mean I have to reject Rav Sheshes' position, which was supported by the first brisa. Mishum masnisa masnisani. We have machlokas astira between two brises, and there's no way I can know which one is correct. Each, you know, elu v'elu. But in your case, Rabbi Chaim, you're just giving your bar svara, and maybe you could dazzle us with your brilliance and your originality, but it's got to be well-founded in the sources. And at the end of the day, I'll find, I don't know if it means every time, but more often than not, I'll find a brisa to contradict what you said. So Rabbi Bar Chava at this point was put in a position where, you know, sort of self-defensive. So he turns to Rabbi Yitzchak and says, "Boy, mine milsi, you know what? Let's you test me. Let's see if what you say is actually true. Ask me a question. The afshelach kimas nisa, and I'm going to give you an answer to your question based on svara. But when we go out and check out the brises, you'll find that the brises will support my opinion." In other words, Rami Bar Chama was so confident that he says, "Put me to the test. I will prove to you," says Rami Bar Chama, "that I can give you the answers based on my svara, but those answers are authoritative." I'm not sure exactly why passing the test at this particular point would counter all the history before. But maybe, you know, maybe, just maybe, Rabbi Bar Chama is saying that you're blowing it out of proportion of Yitzchak. You know, maybe on certain occasions I could admit that the Braisa contradicted me, but as a general rule, my Eisen is Svara, my absolutely reliable Svara, will be borne out and supported by the Braisa. So, boy, meaning. All that was just a background to our Sugya, because we're learning now about Mariku Shtifa. And now Rabbi Yitzchak asks Rabbi Bar Chama his question. Bishel, so we're talking about a kli, a vessel that was used as a cooking pot for korbanos. But the mikzas kli, he did not cook in the entire kli, but only in part of the kli. So let's say part of the kli is off the fire. Again, you'd have to see how this is structured, because what does it mean? The Gemara says bishel b'mikzas kli is time riku shtifo ein time. No, do you need an entire Marika Shtifa, an entire Kli, or maybe you just have to do a Marika Shtifa B'mitzas Kli on that part where he cooked? And the very premise of this question here is a little bit odd. I mean, Mimonafshak, what's the case? Is the case that the rest of the Kli is cold? I mean, again, I don't know how you'd structure a Kli in that way. In other words, there was no Ispashtu Satam to the cold part, to those part, you know, foodstuffs were in the cold part. Is that if that be the case, then I have two problems. A, so why would you need Mariku Shtifa? But moreover, Rabbi Yitzchak later on is going to say that Bishel's Mifafea, which means that the Tam, as a result of Bishel, spreads out and permeates throughout the walls of the Kli. Now, let's assume, on the other hand, that maybe the entire Kli is hot. Then what was the Tzad to say that you're not Chayiv Mariku Shtifa on the entire Kli? Because if the entire Kli is hot, then there's no doubt that the Tam would permeate throughout the Kli. And B'dochak, we're going to have to say that Rabbi Yitzchak Safek, when he raised the question, was Shari Surim. You know, let's forget about Kodshim right now. Perhaps in Shari Surim we should have a Safek, whether Bishol and part of the Kli will, the Tam will be permeated throughout the entire Kli. And what Rabbi Yitzchak is going to say with all certainty, namely that the Bishul's Mispasha B'chol HaKli, that's a din in Kodshim. That's why the Torah requires Mariku Shtifa. Another possible approach would be to say the following, that it's true that as a general rule, Miktas Kli, Bishul Miktas Kli is Mifafea, it permeates throughout the Kli. But when the Torah requires Mariku Shtifa, that's a separate halacha, and that would apply even if lo is Pashit B'kulo. So again, in a regular case, in a normal, shall I say, you know, by the laws of biology and science, normally you would say that the, you know, if there's Bishul Mimiktas Kli, then the Tam is Mufafet in the entire Kli. But if the circumstances are such that we have reason to believe that there was no Hispashtus Habliya, that there was no permeation of the taste, then we know that the Torah was Machmir to require Mariku Shtifa even without this Pashtus Hatam. And now the question would be, is that Chumra B'Toras Blia, as if it was Shari Surim, or it's a separate din of Mariku Shtifa? And the difference is going to be if I can get out that Blia, if I can get part of the Blia, that part of the Kli, where the Blia took place, I can completely purge that part of the Kli of its Tam. That would be fine in other Isurim, but maybe here, in the case of Kodshim, B'Toros Machmir, and apply the rules of Hispashtus and Papua, Pipua, even when lo Hispashtu Bekulo. And that's a suffix in the Gemara. In any event, Omalei, the response of Rabbi Bar Chama to Rabbi Yitzchak was the following. Einotan. There's no requirement of Mariku Shtifa. Just get rid of that Blia in that one spot. You don't require some sort of traumatic act of Mariku Shtifa for the entire Kli. And I'll prove it to you. I mean, I don't have a brisa, but I can prove it to you based on svar. Midi gahavia hazav. Let's go back to the case of Begit Shenitazolov Dam Chatos, that if the Dam, you know, stained this Begit, Dam Chatos stained the Begit, he has to subject the beggar to kibus. What part of the beggar? Only the part where the stain is. He can isolate and circle the stain, and that's where he does the kibus. There's no din that requires kibus on the entire beggar. And by analogy, the same thing applies with regard to bishul of kodshim and akli, which requires mariku shtifa, but only in the case of bishul v'miktsas, only in that part where the bishul took place. So now Rabbi Yitzchak asks Rabbi Bar Chama, "V'holo tani hachi?" You keep saying that you can support your claim and your svara with a brisa. Where is this brisa? Amalei, so Rabbi Bar Chama admits to him, "Mistavra kibeget." There's a logically compelling argument to say that this miktsas kli, as far as Mariku Shtifa, has the same status as the beget shenitas ol dam chatos, because the hazo was only on a specific part of the kli. And we learned in Mishnah back on Sadi Gimel in days that ma beged enoton kibus el b'makom adam, that you only need kibus in the makom adam, in that specific location where the dam fell on the beged. And therefore, says Rabbi Bar Chama, we should apply the rule of af kli in the case of a kli bishul enoton mariku shtif el b'makom bishul. So now Rabbi Yitzchak rises up against this svara for two reasons. First of all, Amalei, Rabbi Yitzchak responds to Rabbi Bar Chama, and he says, "Midami, how can you make a logical analogy between dam shenitas al beged and a kli where there was only bishul b'miktsas? There's a fundamental difference between the two. Dam lo mefafer, bishul mefafer. When blood stains a beggar, there's no reason in the world to assume that that's going to continue permeating throughout the beggar. There's no espashtus. Wherever it fell, that's where it fell, and that's where it stayed. And therefore, you don't need kibus except for the place where the dam stayed. But in the case of kli bishul, we have reason to assume that if it was mevashal b'miktsas akli, there's espashtus of bishul b'kol akli, that the tam permeates throughout the entire kli. So at least on a logical level, you have to admit, Rami Bar Chama, that there is a distinction here. Your analogy really jumps, you know, really jumps over a gap. But V'od, in addition to that, Tanya, as I said before, Rabbi Yitzchak says to his Rebbe, very often, I don't know if it's more often than not, we find a brisa that rejects your svara. And this brisa is going to prove that that bishul miktsas kli requires Mariku Shtifa on the entire kli. The brisa enumerates all the chomrei dinim, that the chumras that are generated by the chovas kibus habeged or the chovas mariku shtifa. Number one, chomer ba'azomi mariku shtifa. There are dinim in terms of the chiyuv kibus and the beged that are more chomer than the requirement in the case of kodshim shenispashim l'kli of mariku shtifa. Not only that, but yesh v'chomer B'mariko shtifa yosem b'bazor. It goes the other way around. In certain instances, mariko shtifa is dafka more chumra than azor, than the dam that was nitaz al gavi beggar. Damchat. So Gemara now clarifies this brisa. No, it could be the brisa itself is clarifying its own opening statement. And it goes like this. Chomer ba'azah, the case of hazah, of dam chatas, onto a beggar that has a chumra above and beyond mariku shtifa, why? Shazah yesh nebachatos kitzonos, chatos pninis. The chomas kibus in a beggar, in the case of nitazal of dam, makes no distinction between a dam of a chatas chitzon or a dam of a chatas pnimis. All the dam has the same status and it generates a chiyuv of kibus. Number two, yeshno lefnei zrika, that if some of the dam fell onto the beggar before zrika, then a beggar needs kibus. And we'll see exactly why that's a big chiddush. Masha enkin b'mariku shtifa. These dinim that we mentioned don't apply to mariku shtifa. Which means that if he's mevashel other karbonos, they have to be kept karbonos ha-ne'echolos. Okay, we're going to underline that word ne'echolos, because that's the key here to understand this sugya. In other words, in the case of chatas pnimis, the basar, the chatas, is burnt outside the machne. There's no din of nechal. Now, if he's mevashel basar before zrikas adam, and it's not royal achila, in such a case, the kli would not require mariku shtifa, because mariku shtifa only applies if he's mevashel basar, which is an echelos. That's why it would not apply to the case of chatas primis, because that doesn't have any basar nechal. And it wouldn't apply to the basar before zrikas adam, because it's not royal achila. Something that's royal achila is subject to the law of mariku shtifa. However, these two cases, namely chatas primis and bishal kodem she zrikas adam, there's no nechelis, there's no royal achila. And there's no requirement in mariku shtifa. Now the brisa continues to establish the chumra of mariku shtifa. Chumra mariku shtifa. Mariku shtifa in a case of bishal mekli, bishal kodesh mekli is more chumra than the beggar shenita zalav kli. Chat is the case of azah. Shal mariku shtifa noheg is bein mekodeshei kodeshim ubein mekodeshim kalim. And bishal b'miktzas hakli ton mariku shtifa. So azah, meaning the dam chatos that fell onto the beggar, that only applies to kodshim kodshim. So therefore, if dam chatos falls on a beggar, then since chatos is kodshim kodshim, you require kibus. Number two, the kibus only applies to that makom, that specific location on the beged where the netizah's dam happened, but not on the beged completely as one entity. So we see that the brisa is absolutely outspoken, you know, clear as you can get it, explicitly in saying that if you're mavashal b'miktas kli, you need mariku shtifa for the entire kli, which is against Rami Bar Chama. Amaleis, Rami Bar Chama says, "Itanya tanya." He throws up his hands and he says, "Look, you defeated me. I have to confess I lost this challenge, this duel. Because if you found the Brisa, then we have to go after the Brisa. The Brisa is authoritative and my opinion is not, if it's contradicted by the Brisa." So again, the Brisa clearly states that in the case of mariku shtifa, if you have a bishul b'miktas kli, then it requires mariku shtifa, and that makes it stand as a chumra in contrast with Dam chat shenitas ala beged, where the kibus is only, you know, pinpointed stain kibus on that particular stain. V'taima mai, the Gemara wants to clarify, why is it that bishul b'miktas you require mariku shtifa on the entire kli? The Gemara answers on makra. The pasuk by Yikra Vav says, "V'im b'kli nechoshes bushala, morek v'shuta b'mayim." is afilu b'miksas kli, it needs mariku shtifa. Again, there's a discussion here in the Torah Tumim exactly how the Gemara dashes this chumrah from the pasukim from kli choshes, kli nechoshes bushala. Now there's a kasha here. Why did the Gemara say my taima? Take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says taima my. It seems unnecessary to ask for a tam and try to quote and evoke a drush and a pasuk when we're holding that bishul's mefafea and the tam is mispashit b'kol akli. So we're going to have to answer that. Although the tam is mefafea b'chol akli, that's not mariku shtifa. Again, that means it needs hechsher, but it's not exactly mariku shtifa. And Bli Neder, a little bit later on, we'll see the differences between stam kashering to get rid of the bliya and mariku shtifa as a separate mitzvah in the case of bishol's kodshim. Now we mentioned here chatos pnimis, and we said that the halacha of dam shenitas agavi abeged applies whether or not it is chatos chitzona or even chatos pnimis. So chatos pnimis, there are five chatos that fit that category, and all of them require an avoda inside the heichal. We have a par koi mashiach, we have par pelin dovashel tzibur, we have seiri avoda zora, par yom kippur, v'soyer shel yom kippur, and these require hazah and nesinas adam in the heichal. The hazah is going to be on the paroches, the nesinas domim will be on the mizbach hazah, and then you have, in very rare cases, that's par v'soyer shel yom kippurim, you have hazah lefnai v'lefnim inside the kodesh kadosh. Chatos chitzona is a reference to all chatos tam. It doesn't matter whether it's a chatos yochid, a chatos tzipur. It requires a matan domim of arba matonis on arba karonos b'mizbech hachitzon. These are the dinim that apply to chatos pnimis as opposed to chatos chitzona. Now, the Torah mentions here mariku shtifa, and then after the Torah does so, it says kol zachar b'kohenim yochal osa. And this is going to teach us that only necholos are subject to a din of marika ushtifa. So from this we're going to learn that there's a chomer in dam kodshim, number one, because it applies to both chitzona and pnimis, and an additional chomer if the dam falls on the beged even before zrika. None of this applies in the case of mariku shtifa, because mariku shtifa only applies when it's a korban hanechal. And this is based on the pasuk kol zachar kohen yocholos, as we mentioned earlier. That these necholos, these korbanos which you call necholos, they require mariku ushtifa. So we have these kulos in terms of this, you know, the more limited scope of the requirement of mariku shtifa, in contrast to the much, much broader scope of the requirement of kibus in dam chata shenofa. On the other hand, you have the mariku shtifa chumra, because that applies even to kachim kalim, and we're holding now that dam, that the din of dam chata applies exclusively to dam chatas. And then we have another chumra mariku shtifa, that if there was a bishul b'miktsas, you need mariku shtifa for the entire kli. The Mishnah says that echad kodshi kodshim, echad kodshi kalim, te'unim mariku shtifa. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kodshim kalim, ein te'unim mariku shtifa. And the Gemara is going to analyze this machlokas. Tana Rabbanan, the Braisa begins with a pasuk vayikra vav. At the beginning of the parasha of mariku shtifa, the Torah opens with the words zos toras hachatos. Ainli ela chatos. If you took the boss of the chatos and you cooked it in a kli, that's when you require mariku shtifa. But kol hakodshim, what about the balance of all the kodshim, where they took the basar and you cooked it in a kli? Minayin, how do we know that this will require Marikus Shtifa? Even though we're not talking about Chatas, we're talking about Shar Kodshim. Talmud Lomer, the Pasuk says, Kodesh Kadoshim Hi. And that's coming to be Marbe Kodshim Kalim, which is a little bit odd, paradoxical, that the words Kodshim Kodshim, this is Rav Shimon actually says, a Kodshim Kodshim comes to tell you to exclude Kodshim Kalim from the mitzvah of Mariku Shtifa, but here the Ribui is coming to teach you, and this is the Sheet of the Tanakama, that even Kodshim Kalim require Mariku Shtifa. Yochal Shani Marbes HaTshuma, I might think that once we're expanding the scope of the requirement of Mariku Shtifa, let's go as far as to require Mariku Shtifa in the case where he cooked Truma, which is Osil Zorin, in a pot, and now we're going to require Mariku Shtifa? No. Talmud Lomar Osa. The Pasuk says, Kol Zachar B'Kodem Yochal Osa. And we have a miut from the word Osa Prat L'Truma, that it doesn't require Mariku Shtifa. That's the Shita of Direi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kodshei Kodshim, if you mavashal kodshi kodshim in a kli, to unim mariku shtifa, kodshim kalim enom to unim mariku shtifa. So whereas Rabbi Yehuda said that there was a ribui to include kodshim kalim, Rabbi Shimon rejects it and he says dechsiv kodesh kadoshim, and we're not going to expand it to include kodshim kalim. And if it was mavashal kodshi kodshim, yes, in, then it requires mariku shtifa, but kodshim kalim lo. Now the Gemara wants to explain, well, why didn't Rabbi Yehuda use this miut of Kodesh Kadoshim He to exclude Kodeshim Kalim, just like Rabbi Shimon did my time with Rabbi Yehuda? And the Gemara answers that, again, Rabbi Yehuda holds, let's not forget that even Kodeshim Kalim require Mariku Shtifa. If the Torah would have excluded Kodshim Kalim from Mariku Shtifa, then by definition I would certainly know the Kalvachom ben Benoshel Kalvachom that Truma doesn't require Mariku Shtifa. Why do we need a miut to exclude Mariku Shtifa in the case of Truma? Again, if Kodshim Kalim don't require Mariku Shtifa, then certainly Truma doesn't require Mariku Shtifa. So why do you need Osa to exclude Truma? The answer is, you need Osa to exclude Truma because Truma is one inch lower than Kodshim Kalim. This is Kodshim Gvulin, this is Kodshim Mikdash, but very similar in the level of Kedusha. And if we find that the ribui of Kodesh Kadoshim He comes to include Kodshim Kalim, according to Rebbe, in this requirement of Mariku Shtifa, I might think that even Truma should require Mariku Shtifa, should generate Mariku Shtifa, and that's where we have the miut of Osa. Rav Shimon Amar Lecha, Rav Shimon says, no, the Torah writes Kodesh Kadoshim, and that's coming, Kodshim Kadosh coming to exclude Kodshim Kalim. And how much more so we derive from this that if he was Mavashal Truma, he doesn't need Mariku Shtifa, because if the Torah is excluded even Kodshim Kalim from the requirement of Mariku Shtifa, then how much more so goes without saying that we exclude Truma? So therefore we have to ask ourselves, so what is the word Osa coming to tell us? It's not coming to be Mamai Truma, Ella, but rather Kidav Rinon. Like Rabbi Shimon said, we should darshan the Pasuk, this is back on Daf Tzadik Gimel, that if some of the Dam Chatos was Nitan, then if it was possible at the time of the Nitiza, then it doesn't require Kibus. And we have a special Ribui to exclude Kibus in the case where there was a Shasa Kosher, where at one point the Dam was Kosher, then it became possible. But if the Dam was possible, then the beggar does not need kibus, and here Rabbi Shimon, against, if you recall, Rabbi Akiva, Reb Shimon's opinion is that even if it has a shas hechsher, but now it's possible. So at the time the dam fell on the beggar, it was possible. There's no need for Marikul Shtifa. Now the Gemara wants to clarify, is it really true that Truma doesn't require Marikul Shtifa? You know, it's okay for the Kohen to use this Kli, but if Yisrael wants to use the Kli, and there's a Tam Balua of Truma in it, so Truma Loboy Marikul Shtifa, how are you going to get rid of that Tam? Vatanya, we learned in the Braisa, Kiderish and Bisho Babosol, Yvash Bacholov, and Bisho Bacholov Benosein Tam, Truma Lo Yvash Bacholim, and Bisho Benosein Tam. So there's a din of Nesinas Tam. If there's a Tam of an Isa that's Bolua in the case of Cholav and Basar, if he cooked both in the same Kederet, not even simultaneously, but Bazeh per Zeh, then there's a din of Nesinas Tam. And in the case where he was Mavashel, in a Kederet, he was Mavashel Peros of Truma, then he can't use that. He cannot use that Kedera to be a Vashel Chulin, because then the Chulin will absorb the time of the Truma from the walls of the Kli through the second Bishul. And he's the Israel, he's not a Kohen, he's not going to be able to eat these fruits. But the Bishul, but at the same time, let's say he went ahead, he was Mavashel, both Truma and Chulin, in the same pot, then we have already a problem of Tam Ki'ikar. We have to clarify if there's a Tam or not. So in this case, we're in the worst case scenario, it's Truma, then we can give it to a Kohen, ask him to taste it on our behalf, and he'll determine whether there's a Tam of Truma in this mixture. So it means even in the case of Bishul Truma, you're going to need Hagolah, you're going to need to be Machshir to get out the Blias if there's a taste of Blias Isur. Again, we can ask the Kohen in the case of Truma, in the case of Bas Mecholav, we'll invite the Goy Kfeilah to tell us what's going on over here. Is there Tam Basu Mecholav? But be that as it may, after all is said and done, you're going to have to subject the Kli, if there is a Tam Bolua, to Hagolah. And that applies to Truma as well as all the other cases. So therefore, how can you tell me that there's a mute in the parish of Riku Shtifa to exclude Truma? Amar Abaye, Lo Tzricha, the Braisa doesn't have to exclude Truma from Riku Shtifa, Ella Lida Omar Mar, Bisho Mimitzis Kli, Toim Riku Shtifa, Shtifas Kala Kli, Ha Truma Lo Tzarch, the mute to exclude Truma from Riku Shtifa is going to apply to this particular scenario. In other words, here's the chumrah of Marikul Shtifa that applies to anything that's included in the parasha, as opposed to Truma, which is excluded from the parasha. And that chumrah is Bishul B'miktas Ta'un. He requires Marikul Shtifa for the entire Kli. Where in the case of Truma, you're only worried about Blia, and therefore you need Hagol to get rid of the Blia. But that only applies to that part of the Kli, which is called Makom Bishul. Rava Amar Lo Tzricha. I have another reason why there's a fundamental difference between Hagola in the case of Truma, to get rid of the Tam Truma, and Mariko Shtifa in the case of Kodshim. Lamanti Omar B'mayim V'lo B'yayim B'mayim V'lo B'mozuk. Ha Afil B'yayim Afil B'mozuk. So if you're talking about Mariko Shtifa, so the Torah requires Mayim. Umorak V'shutof B'mayim, it says. And we're going to assume that means Mayim to the exclusion of other Mashkin, for example, Yayin. And not only that, Mayim V'lo Mozu. You might say that, well, what if I dilute the wine and it's mostly water? No. Even Mozu is excluded. That's as far as Mariku Shtifa is concerned, when the Kli was used to be Mavashal Kodshim. But if you're talking about Truma, which is not part of the mitzvah of Mariku Shtifa, you just have to get rid of the Blia by subjecting the Kli to Agola. There's no difference here. Afilu B'Yayin, Afilu B'Mozu. You can do Agola in any mashke. Our meaning is to use water, but you can theoretically use Yayin and Mozu. And now we have Rabba Bar Ula. Rabba Bar Ula is going to clarify the difference between Hagolah and Mariku Shtifa Lo Tzricha El Lamanti Omar Mariku Shtifa Bitzone. that Mariku Shtifa, meaning after you did the Hagola of the Kli Bacham, and then you do a cooling off process on the inside, the outside of the Kli B'Sone. So you magil the Kli Bechamin, and if you require Mariku Shtifa in those cases, then you can use Tzonein to achieve that goal and fulfill that mitzvah of Mariku Shtifa. But ha, here in the case of Truma, which was excluded from the parasha of Mariku Shtifa, it's enough afilu Bechamin, do the Hagol Bechamin, get rid of the Blia of Truma, and there's no further need for Mariku Shtifa Bitzonein. The Gemara asks, but ha, Nicha, that makes sense. I can accept that distinction. Laman diyoma Mariku Shtifa Bitzonein, if you're assuming that Mariku Shtifa was with cold water, and we can waive that requirement in the case of Truma, because all you need is Hagol Bechamin and Gandik, that's finito. But El Laman diyomar Mariku Bechamin Shtifa Bitzonein, that you have to split between the Mariku itself, which requires Chamin, and Shtifa's Bitzonein, is Michael and Meimar. So what, to what extent are you excluding Truma, that it doesn't need Mariku Shtifa? It certainly needs Mariku. And after the Mariku Bechamin, you'll do Shtifa. So the answer is no. Says the Gemara, Shtifa Yisertahi. As far as Shtifa is concerned in this Mandi Omar, there's no need for Shtifa. You don't have to rinse it out in cold water. You've already achieved the Hagolah Bechamin. That's the case of Truma. So Truma doesn't require Shtifa Bitzonein after the Hagolah Bechamin, whereas a Bishol in a Kli, Bishol Kachim B'Kli, where the mitzvah of Mariku Shtifa is going to apply even after the Chamin, we're going to require Shtifa Bitzonein. The Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Tzadivov and Beis presents a machlokas between Rabbi Tarfon and Chachamim, and we're talking about exactly when Mariku Shtifa is required, and what is Mariku and what is Shtifa. So first we have a sensational opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. He says Bishol b'tchilas haregel, let's say during Yontif there was a lot of kodshim, you know, that were prepared and cooked in the various kelim. So Rabbi Tarfon says you don't have to require a Mariku Shtifa immediately. Eliyavashel bo kol haregel, you can continuously do the Bishol during the entire course of the regel, and at the end of the regel then he does Mariku Ushtifa. And this will require a separate analysis, how you are allowed to wait through the entire week, because the Chachamim Shita here is much more logically intuitive. Chachamim Omrim Ad Zman Achila, and then you're only allowed to continue to Mivashal without Mariku Shtifa until the allotted time for Achila passes, because after that we have a problem of Blias Nosar, and therefore we must solve and resolve that problem with Mariku Shtifa. So you can only wait ad sof zman achilu shal ha-korban shen is bashal bo, whatever the korban was. If it's shlomim, you give it another day. If it's other korbanos, you give it one day. But once that time passes, then you must do Mariku Shtifa, because you want to use the kli for other bishul, and that you can't do it as a blias isa. Now we get to Mariku Shtifa. What is Mariku Shtifa? So Gemara has the case of koshal bracha. There too, we require Mariku Ushtifa. And the Mishnah says, Mariku Ushtifa is Mariku Kamrika Sakos Ushtifa Kishtifa Sakos. If you have a kosher Birkas Amazon, it requires Hadacha Mi Bifnim Ushtifa Mi Bachutz. So you're going to have to really rinse it out well in the inside, and then you rinse it on the outside as well. That's the way Rashi learns the Sugya. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnah says that Mariku is much more of a rechitza midduk dekes. In other words, he does a more serious kind of scrubbing. Shtifa is just a sort of like an additional nekius for the kli. But again, the Rambam has to now explain why the Mishnah equates Mariku and Shtifa with a koshal bracha, koshal birkas hamazon. So on that, there's a whole discussion here in the Achronim, which you'll see codified here and summarized in Lialkut HaBiurim. In any event, the Mishnah continues, it says, Mariku Ushtifa Bitzonein. Now there's another girsia that has marika b'chamin u'shtifa b'tzonein. So we have two opinions about marika, whether marika requires hot water or cold water. And if we're going to accept the equation with koshal bracha, then it makes sense to say that both marika and shtifa would require tzonein. But then keep in mind, we're not dealing with a koshal bracha here. We're dealing with kodshim that were somehow absorbed into the walls of the kli. And here on the top of Tzadi Zion, we'll just finish the Mishnah, Hashipud, which is a spit that you penetrate into the meat, and it's like a rotisserie, you know, it goes around and around, and it roasts the meat. So you're roasting the meat on a metal vessel, a kli that's called a shapud. Va'askala is also a similar idea. You're talking about a tzli, a roasting of basar, where they put the meat on top of some sort of a grate, you know, it looked like a reshet. And he roasts the meat of Kodesh, the basar Kodesh, on this askala. Now he wants to be makshrit from the Isur Nosar, is Magi'ilam Bechamin. He can do so through Hag'ola. And the question is, how can Hag'ola work for Kodshim in Mayim Chamim? We should require Libun. Because here we're talking about Baba'esh. Actually, it's this week's Parsha, Parsha's Matos. And it should require Libun. How do you get away with Hag'ola in this case? There's a discussion about this in the Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah, Daf Ayin Vav, and the Gemara gives a number of different explanations as to why you don't require Libun in this case. According to Rava, we're talking about a case where after the Bishul of Chatas today, he was Mevashel on that very same day Shlomim, and once he's Mevashel Shlomim, he was Mevashel not only today Shlomim, but the next day Shlomim, and therefore the Bishul itself does an automatic Hagolah on the Kli as long as the Bli is still Heter. So you have sort of like a domino theory, and therefore the Kli doesn't need Libun. So Bli Neder will pick up the Gemara tomorrow here on the top of Daf Tzadi Zayin Omen Aleph.